Extract 1. You hear two friends talking about online privacy. Now look at questions 1 and 2.
You know, I think privacy as we used to understand it is a thing of the past.
Why do you say that? Not another scare story in the papers. They're always full of fanciful tales of doom and gloom.
You may laugh, but after what happened yesterday...
What did happen?
I was discussing the whole issue with an uncle of mine who's just turned 85. He proudly informed me that there couldn't be any data relating to him on the internet because he'd never used a computer.
Well, fair enough, surely.
Well, I only spent a couple of minutes searching and was still able to come up with quite a bit of stuff about him.
Really? That's a bit worrying. I bet he was taken aback, wasn't he?
He was stunned, speechless. Asked me to remove it all from cyberspace. But it doesn't work like that, of course. What's there is there.
That does seem an erosion of privacy. Mind you, come to think of it, I suppose there's also been some information available on us all for a while, way before the days of the internet.
But it wasn't so easy to get at. And the situation's not going to improve.
No, I guess not. Quite the opposite.
You know, I think privacy as we used to understand it is a thing of the past.
Why do you say that? Not another scare story in the papers. They're always full of fanciful tales of doom and gloom.
You may laugh, but after what happened yesterday...
What did happen?
I was discussing the whole issue with an uncle of mine who's just turned 85. He proudly informed me that there couldn't be any data relating to him on the internet because he'd never used a computer.
Well, fair enough, surely.
Well, I only spent a couple of minutes searching and was still able to come up with quite a bit of stuff about him.
Really? That's a bit worrying. I bet he was taken aback, wasn't he?
He was stunned, speechless. Asked me to remove it all from cyberspace. But it doesn't work like that, of course. What's there is there.
That does seem an erosion of privacy. Mind you, come to think of it, I suppose there's also been some information available on us all for a while, way before the days of the internet.
But it wasn't so easy to get at, and the situation's not going to improve.
No, I guess not. Quite the opposite.
Extract 2. You hear two trainee chefs discussing the issue of food waste. Now look at questions 3 and 4.
Did you know that over 7 million tons of food is thrown away every year in the UK?
Really? That's one big garbage mountain.
Yeah, and it costs huge amounts to collect, not to mention clogging landfills and producing vast amounts of CO2 emissions.
There's not much we can do about it though, is there?
Well, actually, restaurants are some of the worst offenders. That's why we adopted responsible practices in our kitchen a while back. We've only got one garbage bin now, despite having 100 seats, but two compost machines for food waste.
Oh, come on. We've got 4 or 5 bins and only 60 seats at our place.
Look, anything is possible. Our place is unrecognisable from what it was like last year, as is my boss. Can't think what's got into him. Thinking ahead for a change.
OK, maybe I'd better talk to my head chef. Might be fighting an uphill battle, though.
There are other things you can do, too. My chef's obsessive about portion control, keeping an eye on how much food customers leave and altering dishes accordingly.
Don't you get complaints about small servings?
Granted, we don't do enormous portions, but if occasionally someone wants a little bit more, we'll give it to them. It works. Honest.
Don't suppose we'd go far down that road.
Did you know that over 7 million tons of food is thrown away every year in the UK?
Really? That's one big garbage mountain.
Yeah, and it costs huge amounts to collect, not to mention clogging landfills and producing vast amounts of CO2 emissions.
There's not much we can do about it though, is there?
Well, actually, restaurants are some of the worst offenders. That's why we adopted responsible practices in our kitchen a while back. We've only got one garbage bin now, despite having 100 seats, but two compost machines for food waste.
Oh, come on. We've got 4 or 5 bins and only 60 seats at our place.
Look, anything is possible. Our place is unrecognisable from what it was like last year, as is my boss. Can't think what's got into him. Thinking ahead for a change.
OK, maybe I'd better talk to my head chef. Might be fighting an uphill battle, though.
There are other things you can do, too. My chef's obsessive about portion control, keeping an eye on how much food customers leave and altering dishes accordingly.
Don't you get complaints about small servings?
Granted, we don't do enormous portions, but if occasionally someone wants a little bit more, we'll give it to them. It works, honest.
Don't suppose we'd go far down that road.
Extract 3. You hear two students talking about an experiment into the way people perceive time. Now look at questions 5 and 6.
Do you know anything about that experiment the lecturer was referring to?
I've looked it up. It involved this Frenchman spending 2 months in a cave under a glacier in 1962, I think it was. He was 100 metres below ground, and because he had nothing to track the time, no clock, obviously, no sun either, he got disorientated. When he came back up, he thought he'd been down there for just 34 days. Very revealing for the researchers, who'd anticipated it would go the other way. Various stuntmen and entertainers have done similar things to push themselves to extremes, but then, of course, they've always got an eye on the headlines they'll create.
That's fascinating.
Yes. It's all about temporal landmarks. They're really important. If you build more of them into your life, you'll experience time differently. Days and years won't be one undifferentiated mush. Temporal landmarks help stop the feeling that time's whizzing by. I bet, for example, you retain memories of events that happen near the beginning or end of term, their kind of landmarks, better than those that happen somewhere in between.
So?
So, establish a few landmarks. Remember to mark special events like birthdays properly with some sort of celebration.
That's advice I'm happy to follow. Do you know anything about that experiment the lecturer was referring to?
I've looked it up. It involved this Frenchman spending 2 months in a cave under a glacier in 1962, I think it was. He was 100 metres below ground, and because he had nothing to track the time, no clock, obviously, no sun either, he got disorientated. When he came back up, he thought he'd been down there for just 34 days. Very revealing for the researchers, who'd anticipated it would go the other way. Various stuntmen and entertainers have done similar things to push themselves to extremes, but then, of course, they've always got an eye on the headlines they'll create.
That's fascinating.
Yes. It's all about temporal landmarks. They're really important. If you build more of them into your life, you'll experience time differently. Days and years won't be one undifferentiated mush. Temporal landmarks help stop the feeling that time's whizzing by. I bet, for example, you retain memories of events that happen near the beginning or end of term, their kind of landmarks, better than those that happen somewhere in between.
So?
So, establish a few landmarks. Remember to mark special events like birthdays properly with some sort of celebration.
That's advice I'm happy to follow.
That's the end of part 1. Now turn to part 2.